We've been looking at the book of Job and understanding both its context here on earth and also in heaven, and we've recently gone through the first dramatic dialogue of the book of Job. Remember again what the structure of the book of Job is. There's this opening setting, mostly prose, in which the life circumstances of Job are described. And then at the end, chapter 42, again, mostly prose, but very short, there's sort of an outcome, an explanation of what's going on and what transpired out of this. In between, the bulk of the book of Job is found in three dramatic dialogues. We've looked at the longest one already, Job 3 through 31, in which Job has had conversations with his three friends, Eliphaz, and Bildad and Zophar, and each of those friends have accused Job of doing some bad things somewhere and now falling under the righteous judgment of God. Each time, Job has responded by saying, "You got me. I don't know what I've done. You can't lay a finger on me. I've not done any bad things in that manner. I don't know why this is happening to me." And prayers in which Job says, "God, can you get me out of this situation? Why is this happening to me? At least can you explain it?" Now we're getting into the second dramatic dialogue, Job 32 through 37, just five chapters in which things change a bit, in which there's a sense in which the perspective is different, where the approach to this difficulty of Job is changing a bit. And the key character in this is Elihu. The outline of these speeches you can see in the outline provided is this. A new voice enters the scene. In chapter 32, we're sort of introduced to this new voice. The three friends now are silent because everything they've said, Job has rebuffed. They're probably nursing their hurt feelings. They think, "We've tried to help him. He won't be helped. We can't do anything with this guy. We don't understand what's going on. We've said all we can say, and we've reached an impasse." Enters Elihu. His name means, "You are my God." Hu is the word for "you" in the Hebrew language. Eli means God, my God. So, "my God, you are my God." Where does he come from? Has he been sitting around for a while? Obviously, he has appraised the situation, so he's been in the room, or he's been privy to the conversations, or he's come and he's gone. He understands what the conversations have been about. He has not said anything because he says that it was not appropriate for him as a younger man to speak. This is interesting in itself because wisdom is supposed to come through years of experience, and obviously Elihu is younger than the three who have tried to bring wisdom, and certainly younger than Job. So he's brash in attempting to speak. He's also giving a perspective that is not aligned with age and the perception that wisdom comes with age. He gives a different kind of perspective. And his summary of the situation is that the older friends have not provided appropriate wisdom or answers to Job, and also that Job has not necessarily responded well to them. Then he gives four speeches. Notice that most of his speeches are directed toward Job. And notice as well that in this dramatic dialogue, it's almost a dramatic monologue because Job does not answer Elihu. It is Elihu speaking a new form of wisdom or a new understanding of things and Job not responding to him. In his first speech to Job, he says that God speaks through pain. Now, this may have been hinted at a number of times in the other speeches, but more in a really negative context. The friends all certainly said that God was speaking through the pain and suffering Job was encountering, but they had a tendency to say that the message was a singular message. The message was strictly that Job was being punished. The nuance that Elihu adds here is that all of us suffer in some form, in some way, at some time or another. That pain is something endemic to the human situation precisely because we live in a compromised world in which good and evil seem to be both swirling around us. We participate in these things. And sometimes, indeed, it might be that God addresses our sinfulness through specific actions of punishment and pain. But not always, says Elihu. Sometimes it is simply to live in this world that we experience bad things. I remember how Philip Yancey said it one time. He was working in his younger life with Dr. Paul Brand, and they were participating in the treatment and care for those who had leprosy or Hansen's disease. And at one point, Dr. Brand needed to get something out of a storage room that had a lock on it that had not been used frequently and had rusted tight. So Dr. Brand attempted to turn the key in the lock, and it wouldn't budge. It had been rusted solid. Much younger, Philip Yancey thought he would give it a try, and so he tried to turn the key in the lock, and he too was prevented from doing so because the pain was too great. He could not turn the key in the lock. A young boy, part of the group that was living there in this hospital on these grounds, came and he said, "Can I try?" And so he did. He turned the key in the lock, and he was able to unlock the door. But when he pulled his fingers away from the key, both Paul Brand and Philip Yancey were astounded to see that he had actually cut the flesh off his fingers down to the bone. He couldn't feel it because he had leprosy. And because he had leprosy and his feelings were muted, he was able to turn the key more profoundly with greater power than both Philip Brand or Dr. Brand and Philip Yancey. They had been stopped by the pain that was sent through their nerve systems to their brain. "Stop, stop, stop, you're hurting me." He didn't have the same network of pain control. Therefore, there were no limits on how hard he would twist, even to the point of ripping the flesh off his own fingers. And that's the kind of thing that Elihu indicates here about pain being present in our world. Sometimes, certainly, it comes in response to us doing bad things and destroying other lives and needing to be punished and being taught a lesson. But sometimes pain, says Elihu, is sort of the megaphone of God's voice shouting when we have no longer listened to God, the Creator, any longer. Elihu goes on to talk with the three friends in his second speech, chapter 35 in our books, the book of Job. He addresses the friends and says God is just and warns them not to state more than they ought because they have overstretched the limits of what they understand righteousness to be about. Justice includes righteousness, but justice also begins to understand that there are nuances of interpretation and a need to balance everything in a particular context. And then Elihu turns back to Job a couple of times in two more addresses, one in chapter 36 and another in chapter 37, two more speeches, speech 3 and speech 4. Elihu says to Job, it does pay to serve God. But then he gets back to his main theme that God is just and kind and sovereign, and while we don't fully understand what's going on, we have the possibility of experiencing the goodness of God in all of these things. And this is a different way of looking at what's going on. It isn't as harsh or black and white as the three friends tried to suggest earlier on, that righteousness brings blessing, doing bad things brings evil, and therefore Job's changing situation is because he has done something wrong. In reality, this new thing that enters is that the perspective of the three friends is revealed for what it is. Harsh, righteous, but harsh. They certainly understand this to be a moral universe. They certainly understand that God is in complete control. They understand that good behavior results in blessings and bad behavior results in punishment. But their perspective is a very brittle and harsh perspective The idea that God is morally rigorous and absolute and righteousness is rigid and brittle. Good comes from righteousness, bad results in punishment. While Elihu shares many of their beliefs, the idea that this is a moral universe and that God is in complete control and that good behaviors generally result in blessings and bad behaviors generally bring some punishment, Elihu adds a deeper level of thought and development. He suggests that God is highly relational, not merely righteously rigid. And that's an important thing. It only needs for us to think about our own relationships with others. We want those we love to do good. We want our children to do right. We want our spouses or our friends to be upright and good and righteous. But we also, in our loving relationships with them, are not entirely rigid so that if there's one infraction, if there's one thing that goes wrong, if there's one thing that is less than perfect, we immediately shun them or condemn them. And that's the highly relational part of God's character that Elihu brings back into the picture. God is highly relational, not merely righteously rigid. Also in that light, evil in our world may result from different divine intents. Sometimes, certainly, as the three friends said, God brings punishment on evil. But Elihu adds this dimension. Sometimes God uses pain in sort of a general sense in our compromised world to get us to remember our dependence on God, to get us to turn to God as the source of all good things. And this is different than being punished. I think of things like Hurricane Katrina that came into the southern part of the United States. I think of things that, like when the terrorists slammed airplanes into the World Trade Center towers. I think of times of the tsunamis affecting Southeast Asia. Those great catastrophes, those times of great tragedy, and always we're asking why should this happen? And sometimes people want to be like the three friends who say, because bad people live in New Orleans, or because America has lost its religious foundations, or because the people in Southeast Asia worship a different God. There are all sorts of things thrown out. And Elihu causes us to step back from that and say, wait a minute. It's not always the case that A must necessarily result in B. That there's a rigorous, righteous, rigid commitment, correspondence between crime and punishment, but rather that there is a highly relational God who in this world that is already compromised by evil sometimes is shouting to us through the disasters that happen, will you turn to me? Will you turn to me? Will you understand that I am the source of all life and good things? In other words, while the three friends demand that Job repent, Elihu suggests that maybe Job is telling the truth about his upright character, meaning that he has nothing specific to repent for. He truly does not have skeletons in his closet. He truly has not done some vile act. He truly has not done some terrible thing in the past. But also warns Job not to become haughty or presumptuous. This means that Job needs to listen through these sufferings for the voice of God and to become much more submissive to them. And that, of course, brings the next dramatic dialogue, the dramatic dialogue in which God will speak to Job.